Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision My Coach Cricket Show. I'm David Hinchliffe, and you can find us at pitchvision.com. My guest today is fast bowling coach Ian Pont. Ian's been called the fast bowling doctor for his work at every level from international to club cricket. He's also the author of one of the finest cricket coaching books out there, The Fast Bowler's Bible. Ian, can you start by telling us about the kind of people you've helped bowl faster with more accuracy?
Well, how things have started for me, David, is I've worked at international level. Obviously worked with the Dutch side at the World Cup, and prior to that I was working with Ronnie Irani, who was then playing for England as an all-rounder. Went to the World Cup in South Africa with him in 2003, and from there we found out that we could make Ronnie Irani bowl faster and straighter, which is an amazing thing because Ronnie's not a fast bowler. But when I got hold of Ronnie, he was bowling at 68 miles an hour, and at the World Cup he was bowling 80 miles an hour. Now in terms of speed and yardage, so everybody understands that, 3 or 4 miles an hour is about a yard of speed. You often hear bowlers say, I need a yard of speed. Well, it's about 3 or 4 miles an hour. So for Ronnie to go from 68 to 80 was 12 miles an hour. So we gave him 3 to 4 yards of speed, which is a huge amount. And Ronnie was only renowned for his accuracy, so he didn't lose any of that. Off the back of that, I then came and worked with Essex for 3 years. And while I was at Essex, was fortunate enough to do some work with Darren Goff and help Darren to change his front arm position and hopefully lengthen his career, although he is retiring this year. And then I was also fortunate to work with Dale Steyn, who was our overseas player for 6 weeks, and Dale and I worked together on his speed and accuracy. And Dale today, 3 years on, is either number one or two in the world, so he's done very well. And also, whilst I was spending my time at Essex, working with Andy Bickle and great bowlers like Andre Nell and Alex Tudor, and helping those guys really to understand how you get to use your body to increase speed and accuracy. From there, of course, we've been able to apply that to everybody who bowls, because whatever speed you are, you probably always want to be a little bit quicker. And whatever level you play at, you always want to be a little bit better, in my opinion. So we've been able to give guys more speed and more accuracy. And the biggest thing that I found was that the skills you needed to bowl fast were the same skills you needed to bowl straight. In other words, lining up, going through the crease properly, finishing off correctly. And we've had some great success with it. So now we're able to apply that to every bowler.
And that's something that you stress quite a lot in your coaching and in your book, isn't it? That pace and accuracy aren't exclusive skills.
Yeah, it is. As a young lad, and a lot of people listening to this will also relate to this comment, as a young lad I was told to slow down and bowl a line and length. It's a mistake to think that if you're going to bowl flat out, you can't be accurate. And we can prove that by Brett Lee, of course, who... Brett Lee had a double stress fracture of his spine, went away and got himself fit again and modified his action. He's come back faster and more accurately. But there was a time at the beginning when everybody said Lee was wild. Well, he's certainly not wild. He's one of the most accurate bowlers in the world. Dale Steyn, when he was at Essex, when he first joined us, they said Dale was wild. He's all over the place. Well, he's certainly not that now. So you can have the speed and you can have the accuracy together. No one had kind of put the two things together before or since, and we've discovered the fact that the things, as I said to you, that you need to create the speed, the flip side of the coin is the accuracy. If you do them together, you can have both. They're not exclusive. So for all those coaches that say, slow down, son, bowl a line and length, they're just wrong. Yeah. They're just clearly wrong.
Fitness has a vital role as well in fast bowling, but it is a mystery to a lot of players. Do you advise bowlers on strength and conditioning?
I don't personally, and there are a lot of strength and conditioning coaches now in first-class cricket in particular. All I would say is that I think when I was playing my career, we didn't have coaches to advise us one way or the other, so we sort of found things out for ourselves. All I would say is that, again, science has helped us discover that if you've got a strong core, i.e. midriff area, abdomen, mm-hmm. backside, lower back, thigh area, if that's strong, you've got good legs to support you as you go through the crease, because it's something like 7 or 8 times body weight goes through the front foot on impact. And if you've got a good set of shoulders, strong shoulders, not muscular, but as in flexible and strong, those are the things that you need to generate the speed. If you think it's very similar to a javelin thrower will need to project the javelin as far and fast as they can at a certain angle and repeat that over and over and be consistent. Fast bowlers have a tougher job, because we don't throw a cricket ball 6 or 7 times, or bowl a cricket ball 6 or 7 times like a javelin throw. We have to do it maybe 120, 200 times. So you clearly need flexibility and fitness together. There are specific exercises that anybody could take people through on, but generally speaking, I would say strong core is important, good legs, and a good set of shoulders.
That's one of the things that we talk about a lot on my coach, is being able to transfer your energy from the ground through your body, into the ball, and I think the core is important to that. You also mentioned consistency there. One of the things that is talked about a lot, especially when you talk about elite level players, but I think it applies to all levels. One of the things we talk about a lot is a reproducible action.
Yep.
How does someone get a reproducible action like that?
Well, my personal, and this is why I'm more of a technical coach than a tactical coach. I mean, tactical is just where you bowl the ball. Technical is how you get it there. And to have a repeatable action, I think you have to understand what you do as a fast bowler. I don't think you can just run up day in, day out and just hurl it and fingers crossed it goes in the right direction. I think you need to have a modicum of understanding. So for me, bowling is a process, and it's a scientific approach. You can break that down, which means anybody can then learn it. If it's something that is repeatable and consistent and almost robotic, I don't mean that in the metallic sense, but as in it repeats itself over and over, anybody can learn it. An 8-year-old to a 58-year-old could take these skills and techniques and apply them to their own bowling action. So my view is that the best bowlers in the world absolutely understand what they're doing. If you said to Brett Lee, do you understand your bowling action? Absolutely yes. If you ask Dale Steyn, do you understand your bowling action? Absolutely yes. Glenn McGrath, the same thing. These guys know what they're doing. They don't just run up and bowl the ball like some guys do on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon, and it kind of goes in that direction. So you can learn those things, and when you understand that process, that does lead to consistency.
That's quite interesting, because a lot of the questions we get when we're talking about fast bowling on the forum and things like that is people seem to want a couple of simple tips that are going to transform their speed. But you're mentioning it's more like a process. Most of your book, The Fast Bowler's Bible, is dedicated to that process and the technical elements of the action.
Yep.
What would you say to those people who come onto the forums who say, what do you think of my action? What do I need to do to be bowling at 90 miles an hour?
It's a good question. And you know, I guess where you're coming from is if bowling's a process, could you give somebody a couple of tips? You know, are there certain things people can do? And the answer is absolutely yes. The reason my book came about, The Fast Bowler's Bible, was that when I was writing coaching notes for each of the guys that I was coaching, I was writing the same things over and over. And after about a year of writing the same notes, I thought, hang on a minute, there's about 8 or 10 things here that everybody's not doing correctly. You know, they're having a problem with this, that, or the other. And those 10 key points form the basis of the book. So yeah, absolutely there are things that you can do. A simple thing, for example, is if you run up straight, go through the crease straight and follow through straight, there's a high chance the ball's going to go straight. I mean, that's a given. If it doesn't go straight, you could say there's something wrong with the wrist position and you're pushing the ball in. But all things being equal, you've got somebody bowling straight. If you tell a group of 10-year-olds who bowl wides all the time in junior cricket to do that simple thing, I can guarantee you the amount of wides they bowl will be dramatically slashed down. And at age group level, with the kids, most of those games are won in extras because they just bowl wides. They can't control it. So a simple thing like running up straight, going through the crease straight, following through straight, gives you accuracy and speed because you're moving in a straight line, which is going to be faster anyway. I still hear coaches talking about angled run-ups for bowlers, which makes no sense because when you let the ball go, you've then got to peel off the wicket quickly, otherwise you'll run straight across the stumps. Now, if you're running it in a curve, how could you possibly bowl straight? I mean, that would be pot luck when you let the ball go, or you've got to be some kind of world-class bowler to get your timing right. And as coaches, we tend to complicate a lot of things. Some of this stuff, David, the answer is really simple. It's not rocket science, but it is physics. But we're definitely, if you think if everything goes straight, you're pretty likely to have some success. Length is just when you let the ball go. If you let the ball go above your head, it's a full toss. If you let it go in front of your chest, it's a bouncer. Somewhere in between, like giving somebody a high five, is probably the release for a good length ball. So, I mean, basically, I've summed up there how to bowl a line and length in two easy ways. So you can give people tips. The rest of it, the other key points I mentioned, they become a little bit more technical, but very simple to understand, and that we put them all in the book.
You recently spent some time in the USA doing some coaching. How was that experience?
Very interesting, actually. I was out there with another company who do a lot of cricket coaching. They're very much into the American scene. I had a phone call from the chief executive who said, listen, Ian, we're looking to bring some high-profile, you know, elite-level coaches over to help our lads who are very keen. And I went for a week and did a cricket workshop. It's the hardest I've ever worked. So they had me coaching for 53 hours in the week. I felt a little bit like a doctor waiting for patients at a surgery. These kids would just rock up every hour and say, please, Mr. Coach, can we have... I mean, they're very respectful kids. A lot of Indian, Pakistani, Sri Lankan origin kids, because the parents now work in the States, expats, and therefore, they have a passion for cricket. They don't really have a good outlet for it. That's the problem with American cricket. But the passion is there. And there, I've seen two lads that I'm already recommending to clubs over here. One amateur player, one who I think could be a professional player. And I'm trying to get some trials for him next year. So I saw them just in New Jersey. And I'm sure there'll be hundreds of other kids like that. So my view about America is if they can get their act together financially and they can also organise themselves a bit better, I think they could be quite a force in cricket. I'd love to see an American 2020 team, and with Alan Stanford and his millions, it was not beyond the realms of possibility that could happen.
So it's going to be 2020 in America if it's going to be anything?
I think so. I mean, they're geared up to only playing one day stuff. They're playing 50 overs cricket at the moment, or 40 overs cricket. They play on matting wickets. There's no grass pitches at all in New Jersey where I was. I think there are some grass pitches in Florida and maybe other parts like California and Texas. But it's very much like Dutch cricket in the sense that Dutch cricket is also played on matting wickets, and it's all geared up to win or lose, which then is one day stuff and serves itself very well for 2020, given also the fact that the diet of the Americans for sport is based on baseball, which is 3 hours. 2020 is the same time frame, and I think it could really capture the imagination if they do it properly.
Well, that links us on nicely to some 2020 questions. 2020 bowling is quite an art in itself. How do you coach bowlers to deal with bowling in a situation where pretty much you're trying to get smashed all the time and you only have a couple of overs in a spell, or, you know, 4 overs in total?
Well, first things first, you can't come into the game and bowling your overs cold. Everyone has to, the ones that are bowling, they've been ready to bowl right on the money from the word go. That's the first obvious thing to say. The second thing is, if they're bowling up front with a new ball, it does swing a little bit. Although everybody's in, you've got power plays, you know, you can still bowl a good length ball, back of a good length, swing it and nick people off. We've seen sometimes in 2020 cricket sides being 4 or 5 wickets down in the first 5 overs because they're going out guns blazing and still being caught by good, normal cricket deliveries. However, a bowler has to be flexible in 2020. You only got 24 balls, and you want to try and keep that down to a runner ball if you can, which would be outstanding or less. We're looking for guys to obviously be able to bowl a Yorker, absolutely being able to take the pace off the ball with different deliveries, and also vary the length in the sense they might also want to slip a bouncer in, which sometimes, although it's risky, can also be a good delivery. So it's offbeat pitches, Yorkers, and back of a length short and quick sometimes that can mess guys up. You absolutely don't want to be bowling a length at the end of those innings, because batsmen are setting themselves up to get under the ball, and if they can get under it, I'm afraid it's gone out of the park. But it's really flexibility, and it's also bowlers being aware and looking for visual cues from a batsman as well, because sometimes they walk down the pitch or step away, they give you a clue before you get to the crease.
So would that apply to say younger players who are playing in age group cricket, when they're playing evening games, for example, and they're only 20 over matches? Would you still look at younger players doing similar things? I mean, obviously you're not going to see bouncers, but things like Yorkers and visual cues, would that be the same for when you're playing that sort of level?
Well, it would be if the kids are smart enough. I mean, I work with a couple of lads, both 11 and 12 years old, and I'm teaching them the same stuff that I work with for Darren Goff and Dale Steyn and the professionals that I work with and my pro camp in South Africa. You know, we teach, or I personally teach those kids the same skills they need. I'll talk to them about how to bowl Yorkers. I'll talk to them about using the crease. You know, these kids, 11, 12 years old, they're learning what I call the good stuff at the beginning. I don't think you can have enough good information if you're a youngster. I think you can have one piece of bad information, but I don't think you can have enough good stuff. And I hear parents say, oh, little Johnny's been overcoached here, or he's getting... I don't agree with that at all. I think overcoaching is the wrong thing. I think you can have the wrong coaching, or you can have the right coaching. Yeah. You can never be overcoached, because if it's good stuff, you just eat it up like a sponge. And these kids are sponges. They soak everything up. So the skills for kids are the same. Yeah, if you've got an 11-year-old who can bowl in-swinging Yorkers, he's going to clean up, isn't he? Let's be honest. The difference is, I think, at junior level is that the kids perhaps aren't quite strong enough to hit sixes out of the park, and you might get away with good length balls because their skill levels are lower and they can't actually strike the ball cleanly like adults. But there's absolutely no reason why those kids shouldn't learn the same skills.
What about coaching trends? How has fast bowling coaching changed for you in the last few years? I mean, you've changed the environment with the Fast Bowlers Bible somewhat. But how has it changed for you in the last few years, and how do you think it's going to change in the next few years?
I think that's a really good, interesting question, actually. I think where we're going is that we've realised that we can look a little bit to science to help us out. We can also look to things like Hawkeye, as you know, to help us out. We can look at where cricket balls land on a pitch. We can look at clusters. We can look at beehives. You look at any cricket on television, they give you a huge amount of statistics now. Cricket has moved towards more stats orientated, and as a coach, I need to be mindful of that fact, because I will say to kids, you know, last 12 balls, 15 to win or something, and then we'll try and set games up properly for them to put them in an environment where those statistics actually mean something. So what we've done on coaching terms is we're teaching them the skills so they can change their stats. And why that's important is if your statistics are better than someone else's, you're more likely to get a bigger paycheck at the end of the day. And if we apply that to 2020 cricket in particular, those guys now, some of those guys are earning $1 million for 40 days, and it will be more and more and more. I mean, we might be having this conversation in 3 years' time, and you say, oh, it's laughable, Ian, because, you know, it's now 300 grand a week, not $1 million for 40 days. It's much more, because the money's going up. And the big checks are written out to the guys whose stats are better than the next guy. And it's all coming down to that. So cricket's going much more towards stats. I think as coaches, we need to teach the skills so the kids can improve those stats. And, you know, part of that is the mental development of the game. And I do see that a good coach can understand how to put their arm around someone and support them mentally just as much as giving them the skills physically. So the mental aspect's there, the physical aspect there, the skill set's there, but it's really stats driven now, cricket.
And what are the raw ingredients that you look for in someone who you think maybe might be able to make it to that next level?
The what I look for with some young lad is the ability to absorb information. I guess this applies to all the disciplines of cricket, but if I work with someone and I'm giving them information, how quickly can they take it on board and how quickly are they able to incorporate that into their game? That will tell me quite fast whether those kids can actually move on. I've worked with some lads as young as 9, and there's no way at the age of 9 you can tell whether somebody's going to be successful. And I've picked up a couple of lads age 9 years of age who weren't as good as the others in the group, who are now so far ahead of the others in their group, it's embarrassing. A year later, 10, 11-year-olds, they've left their peers behind because they've been getting good information, they've been applying it, and they understand the processes, as I said to you. In terms of general cricket, I think you're looking for a kid who's got a heart for cricket, a desire and a passion. A lot of kids say to me, oh, I want to play professional cricket, I'd love to do this, that and the other. But when it comes to putting in the hard yards, and I mean training, eating the right foods, getting in the gym, all that kind of stuff, as well as their net practice and thinking about the game, they're found wanting. So they say to me, I want to be a professional cricketer, but their actions don't back that up. So as coaches now, we're looking for kids who have got the complete package, as the ECB define it as 5 disciplines: technical, tactical, physical, mental, lifestyle, those 5 areas. We're looking for kids to tick those boxes, and if they're found wanting in one of those areas, maybe physical, they're not strong enough, or technical, they're not skillful enough, we need to enhance those areas for them. So it's hard when you first see somebody. I will just say this to you, David. I take pride in the fact of identifying talent. That's one of the things I'm really good at. If I see someone hit 6 cricket balls or bowl 6 cricket balls, I could tell you whether that kid's going to be good, because by the way they do things tells you exactly where they are today. It doesn't mean if they can't hit a cricket ball, they won't make it. But you can see by the shape of a shot or the way they catch or the style in which they bowl, you can see instantly whether this kid's got something. And as coaches, we're not looking for it. We're looking for something. They may not have it, but they might have something, and that's all you need.
So it's a combination of being able to pick stuff up quickly, and also then, once you pick that stuff up, being able to have the attitude to see it through. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's a fair assessment. And again, there'll be people that learn slower than others. I mean, just because someone doesn't pick it up first time doesn't mean you throw them out in the car park and say, leave immediately, you're no good. You've got to have the patience to work with people. Again, some of the kids I work with are dyslexic, and I have to be mindful of that because they learn in a different way. They learn kinesthetically, touchy-feely, emotional. So I have to say to them after I do something, how does that feel? Because that's totally different to someone else who might be quite visual and like to see lots of demonstrations and video clips. So again, as coaches, we have a duty to make sure that we understand people's learning preferences. And someone might just not get it in the way we're giving them the information. If you tell someone over and over again to do something, but they're not an auditory person, they won't get it. If you show them how to do it, or you involve them, they might get it. So if someone's a slow learner, it might be the coach's fault in a way. So I wouldn't always dismiss someone because they don't pick things up fast, but the initial premise you made is, can they pick things up quickly and apply them? Yes, if they do that, that's someone, obviously, that you can take forward very fast, and their success rate will be accelerated compared to everyone else.
I think that's something that Greg Chappell says in his book, is that the difference between someone, you know, who can make it and someone who can't is perhaps they can pick things up more quickly, so they can move on to the next level more quickly.
Yeah, and I would say that's fairly, I mean, if you think of it from a classroom scenario, like we were doing a math session, little Johnny picks things up faster than you do, he's obviously going to be higher up the class than you because he's getting the right scores, better scores quicker. So yes, that's an obvious thing to say. I mean, obviously from a point of view of working with people going forward, we want to make sure that we don't lose the kids who are slow learners, which is the point I'm trying to make. And part of the problem with coaching, it's not just a problem for the UK, but generally, is that we pigeonhole people because we've seen them once and we didn't rate them. And 2 years later, we won't re-look at them because we saw them 24 months ago or we saw them 6 months ago. This is why the work that I'm doing, the accelerated learning stuff, is important. People who work with me, if I feel that they've moved on fast, I have no problem emailing and phoning the counties up and saying, you need to see this kid, even if they've seen him 6 months ago, because they won't have seen him today. And this is sometimes we are guilty of dismissing people who are slow learners. So I'm just careful not to do that.
I suppose one of the holy grails of bowling is to become a player that your captain can turn to make things happen. A go-to bowler, if you like. How does someone become a go-to bowler?
Well, I think you've got to learn the skills that set you apart from someone else. For example, Freddie Flintoff and Darren Goff, when they were bowling in tandem for England at the end of the innings in a one-day international, were as good as any pairing in the world. And if I had to put my mortgage on two bowlers to bowl for me, it would be those two guys at the end of an innings because they bowled full, straight and quick. Now, that's a skill that you can learn. So depend upon what you want to achieve, you need to go and practice those skills in the nets. It's no good trying them in the middle for the first time. It's like bowling slower balls. If you want to bowl a slower ball at the back of the hand and you've never done it, don't try and do it in the NatWest final for the first time. You know, you need to be in the nets practicing that for weeks or days or hours, however long it takes you to perfect it. So if you want to become a go-to bowler, you have to think, what are the skills I need to be that go-to bowler? Do I want to be a death bowler? In other words, they're going to throw me the ball at the end of an innings regardless. Are they going to throw me a new ball because I want to be a go-to new ball bowler? Or if I'm a spinner or another type of bowler, what skills do I need to be thrown the ball at that time? I don't think bowlers can be all things to all situations. I really believe that. I think if you think of fast bowlers around the world, there'll be certain times where they're very effective. New ball bowlers, second ball bowlers, reverse swing bowlers, end of innings bowlers. We've all got an idea of what a bowler might be, and that is their go-to skill. So if you want to become a go-to bowler, decide on what you want to be and become really, really good at it.
There's a debate at the moment going on the My Coach site about swing bowling. The two areas that people seem to be debating about are whether swing bowling is all about seam position, all about wrist position with a straight seam, while other people are taking the more traditional approach of saying that it's more about the position of the seam and using the seam as a rudder. Where do you stand on that?
Well, there's loads of ways to swing a cricket ball. I mean, this is the first thing people have to understand, is you can swing a cricket ball a number of ways. One of the biggest things for swinging a cricket ball is the condition of the cricket ball in the first place. Obviously, shine. If you've got a cricket ball that's shiny or rough, if it's going to reverse, that's going to affect whether it swings or not. Obviously, that's the first thing. Condition of the ball. Second thing is the seam. If it's got no seam at all on it, that's not going to help you swing it. If it's got a very proud seam, that's going to help you swing it. Position of that seam is obviously going to help you swing it. If you bowl into the wind or with the wind, that's going to affect it. Wind conditions, whether it comes across the pitch up and down, that affects the ball. Wrist position affects the ball. It's no good having a perfect grip if your wrist comes out at some funny angle and you bowl it like a leg spinner out the side and wonder why it doesn't swing. You can swing a cricket ball with finger pressures, which is pushing one finger on the seam harder than the other. You can put your thumb under the seam of the ball or on the side of the leather. That also makes the ball swing or not. There's a whole variety of ways you can swing a cricket ball. There isn't one way, there's only your way. And what I say to people is go into the nets, experiment, because your grip and your ball position may not work for me. I remember speaking to Mike Kasparovic, who was at Essex for a while and went to Glamorgan, the great Australian bowler, about how he held the ball as a default position for swinging it. And when I held it like that, it just looked so weird in my hand. I have to say, it swung like a banana when I bowled it, and I'd stopped playing for a long time. Other people tried it and couldn't swing it. But it was his like go-to swing position, which was the seam lined up with the index finger. And a lot of people wouldn't do it that way. They would put the seam between the two fingers, not lined up with one of them. And some people have found a way that works for them, which is unique. That's all I'd say to people is there's lots of ways of swinging a cricket ball. There's no right way or wrong way. There's just your way.
So experiment, work out what's best and stick with it.
100%. I think cricket's like that. You know, there are basic rules we can follow, but it's like saying you've got to hold the bat in a certain way to drive the ball for four. You'll see somebody with their hand around the back of the bat hitting the ball for four. So is that wrong or right? I don't know. It's just the way they do it, you know. And it doesn't mean you should copy it. Equally, we'll have people with very poor bowling actions bowling 90 miles an hour. Sean Tate, for example, really unpleasant action to look at, but incredibly effective. My argument would be, could he improve on that? Yes, he could, but he does it that way. That's how he's learnt it, and that's the way he bowls it. I think everybody needs to know, in terms of swing in particular, that it's all about the ball condition, weather conditions help, seam condition helps, position of the seam helps, wrist position helps, etc., etc. Fingers and thumbs on the ball, where they go. All of those things add up to the ball swinging.
Well, I think that just about wraps it up for the questions for today. As we're speaking sort of towards the end of July 2008, what's coming up for you next, Ian?
Well, I do a lot of one-to-one coaching, as you know, a lot of private coaching through MavericksCricket.com. And my book, The Fast Bowler's Bible, is on its third edition now, which I'm really pleased about. I've been approached to write a book about 2020 cricket, which I'm considering doing, which I think will be quite interesting because that's kind of fresh and flavour of the month. Towards the end of this year, I go out to Potchefstroom in South Africa to run the world's first and only international Pro 2020 camp. We hopefully have pros from all over the world coming to that for 10 days. That's at the beginning of December. And at the end of August, I've got a Mavericks European cricket camp in La Manga, where we've got some amateur players aged between 11 and 18, a dozen of them coming out for that. So there's a lot of things going on there. Also, towards the end of September, October, we're going to be launching the Mavericks Cricket Institute, MCI, which is really going to fill the gaps in the marketplace for all those people who want proper coaching. We're going to put in place through some major sponsors, some brand names we've all heard of, hopefully, by the way. And we want to get out there and we want to find some good kids aged 11 to 18. We want to bring them through. We want to help coach them for free. We want to put guys through academies. So that's all going to be announced in due course, and we're currently talking to sponsors, equipment sponsors, manufacturer sponsors, et cetera, about that. But that is a really, really big project, and will have major impact and implications for all of the people who come onto the website and want to improve themselves. Because whatever age you are, you can plug in to MCI at some stage. But for the moment, Mavericks Cricket is what it is, and we just want to evolve that further. So there's loads going on. Hopefully, I'm also going to be spending some time with some of the IPL sides in India. We're negotiating with them on a contract basis to go and do some work with some of the up-and-coming Indian IPL players. So there's really good stuff coming up. But I always, my passion is developing players, young players, through to professional level. So we're always on the lookout for some really good players.
Okay, well, I'll make sure that I put up a link in the show notes to your site so people can keep an eye on things.
Thank you very much. Nice to talk to you.
Fantastic, yeah. Thanks very much, Ian.
Pleasure.